participation. Today, honorable members, the main item we are going to be dealing with, it's a briefing on COP27 by the department. Before we do that, we have an agenda. Can we have somebody who moves to adoption of the agenda? Am I not audible?
Honorable Chair,
yes.
I move that we adopt the agenda. Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Thank you, Honorable Muela. Seconda.
Honorable Mpanza is moving.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mpanza. The agenda is now adopted. Lubabalo, do we have apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Chair, there are apologies. One from the minister. She's hosting the Foreign Affairs Minister of Nigeria. And then the second one from Deputy Minister Mashego Dlamini. She's attending the Extraordinary Council of Ministers in Namibia. And also, honorable Ngosi had mentioned that he'll log in but later attend another meeting. Honorable Faba is also attending another meeting, and Honorable Misha is attending another meeting. The DG Chairperson is on study leave. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, so who do we have from the department who will be doing the briefing?
Please hold, Chairperson. I was given a name yesterday.
Is it Ambassador Hoyana?
Good morning, Chair. Oh, it will be Mr. Simon Hardy that will do the detailed presentation, Slalo.
Oh, Honorable Buetes.
Yeah, but Likaira.
Well, over to you. You're welcome, comrade. Over to you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Let me just greet the Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, Mr. Ramoletsi Mamupelwa. And members of the PC, Kilo Dimudise Lotle. Chair, I'll at this point, with your permission, just exit with the video so that I'm properly audible. Is that
that's
okay?
Perfect. That's perfect.
All right. Thank you very much, Slalo. Honorable Chairperson and members of the PC, we are pleased to report this morning on South Africa's participation in the UNFCCC COP27, which took place in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt earlier this month. In the ensuing presentation, Chair, we'll seek to provide a brief overview of the multitudes of meetings at different levels and involving all categories of stakeholders that make up the UN Climate Conference. We'll also take the PC in confidence on the matters on negotiating dynamics and the outcomes of a few of the thematic and technical work streams, Honorable Chairperson. My input will obviously focus on strategic issues, key outcomes, and our general assessment as DERCO in relation to COP27 on our own contributions, Chairperson, towards the COP27. The President of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, presented and led the South African delegation at the Climate Implementation Summit, which was hosted, Honorable Chairperson, by President El-Sisi of Egypt on 7th and the 8th of November. And the president was supported by the ministers of DERCO and the minister of DWFE and advisors from the presidency. The president was selected by Egypt and the United Nations Secretariat to co-chair with the president of the European Commission the summit's private roundtable discussions on the question of just transition, Honorable Chairperson. It is our submission that it was a particularly useful platform for key decision makers such as the UN Secretary General to share common experiences. Our president spoke to the need for a international support of the just transition framework developed by South Africa towards better, greener and more sustainable livelihoods, ensuring that no one gets left behind, Honorable Chairperson. The president further delivered South Africa's national statement and convened a side event together with leaders from Germany, France, the EU, the USA and the UK on the Just Energy Transition Partnership and our own Just Energy Transition Partnership Investment Plan, Honorable Chairperson. It was announced that the first two Just Energy Transition Partnership contributions from amongst others France and Germany represented $500 million dollars in highly concessional loans, Honorable Chairperson, which have already been signed. After the summit, Minister Krisi led South Africa's multi-stakeholder delegation of negotiators chair for the 2 weeks of COP27 negotiations. And that negotiation team encapsulated the officials from DERCO, the embassy and the embassy in Cairo, which provided support to the president. Our embassy in Cairo chair was actively involved in facilitating business opportunities linked with the green transition in COP side events, including at the South African Pavilion hosted by the National Business Initiative, the NBI. Further to that, Honorable Chair, Minister Krisi was appointed by the COP president to facilitate the ministerial level negotiations on the question of mitigation work program, which is one of the most important and contested agenda items, and also assumed the chair of the Brazil, South Africa, India, and China, the basic group, convening a basic ministerial meeting. Honorable members, in our assessment, we do regard the COP27 as broadly successful, as it has moved the international community forward since the COP26 in Glasgow. It is our submission that it has demonstrated that despite the multitude of other crises competing for the world's attention, the international community remains united on the need to act with a renewed sense of urgency to address the existential challenges of climate change. In particular, Chair, in the current tense geopolitical environment, where your major powers are at loggerheads, it was significant in terms of our assessment to secure mostly progressive outcomes on climate change. Chairperson, the agreement from Glasgow of prioritizing limiting the temperature rise to 1.5 degrees in preference to the 2-degree temperature goal in the Paris Agreement remains alive. There was significant progressions of political messaging at the summit from across all regions on the need for a fundamental transformation of the global financial architecture, Honorable Chairperson, and in particular, the reform of the multilateral development banks to make them fit for purpose in relation to supporting sustainable development and just transitions. Some of the key messaging found its way into the cover decisions for the COP27 outcomes, which is referred to as the Sharm el-Sheikh Implementation Plan. From our perspective, Chairperson, such messaging was of strategic value and builds on the G20 summit and the UNGA outcomes. If the multilateral development banks respond to this groundswell of dissatisfaction, Chair, and actually modernize their operations, we do anticipate that this could lead to funding being unlocked for development on a far greater scale than what we have seen before. And this in turn would ignite potentially even more substantive action from the private sector. Honorable Chairperson, our submission further that the summit has provided political momentum and guidance to the negotiators that contributed to securing an agreement on establishing a new multilateral fund to assist developing countries to respond to loss and damage caused by climate change. And we are further elated, Honorable Chairperson, that the developing countries, particularly from the small island development states, have been trying for nearly 30 years to secure multilateral support to assist them in responding to the devastation caused by extreme weather events such as hurricanes and floods. And it is our anticipation, Chairperson, that this breakthrough would obviously correspond developing states' financial symmetry concerns. Honorable Chairperson, not all issues, of course, we must acknowledge at the COP27 landed the way Africa wanted, which is the nature of a complicated multilateral comprising packages. One, Latin America, Chair, Latin America countries continue to oppose Africa's efforts to secure recognition under the Paris Agreement of Africa's special needs and circumstances. So there is a bit of a challenge in regards to that issue. Secondly, Chair, the COP27 presidency package on finance in the context of the failure of the developed countries to meet the $100 billion US dollar goal each and every year since 2009 provided only for incremental progress towards the establishment of the new collective goal in 2025. It therefore falls short of action, Chair, to meet the obligations of your more industrialized and developed countries. Finally, Chair, as I conclude, what obviously was concerned for Africa, for South Africa and other African countries who did extensive work before and during COP27 in suggesting a framework for the global goal on adaptation that contained high-level indicators and targets to galvanize global action and support, is that we have developed a draft text, Chairperson, that attracted significant international support. However, Honorable Chairperson, the most industrialized and developed countries simply imposed an open-ended and vague alternative text that actually takes us backwards. And I would even say, it's regressive in nature. And therefore, it is our submission that we will have to redouble our efforts, Lalo, to set up concrete multilateral targets and indicators that can help us track progress on reducing vulnerability. At this point, Honorable Chair, I seek indulgence by you granting a permission for Mr. Simon Cardi, who is the Director of Climate Change, Environment Science and Technology, to provide a more detail in terms of the political overview I have presented.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, if I may proceed with the presentation, and I'll keep the camera off so you can see the presentation on the screen. Okay, if that's in order, what I would like to do to build on the introductory high-level remarks from the Deputy Minister is to give an idea of South Africa's overarching approach. This comes from the cabinet mandate secured through a joint submission by Department of Forestry, Fisheries, Environment and DOCO as part of a multi-stakeholder consultation. And then I will give a bit of detail about the structure of COP27 and the complexity of this meeting, then address some of the geopolitical issues, and finally lift some of the more important outcomes from this particular meeting. So, Honourable Chairperson, the starting point for South Africa's delegation going to this meeting was, of course, the urgency of the issue of climate change. And we base this position on science, and the best available science is telling us at the moment that this is the critical decade for action. Laura, if we could maybe go back to the first slide. So we only have a few years left to keep that 1.5 degree temperature goal within reach. Otherwise, the climate change scenarios will rapidly escalate out of control with massive damages associated. So South Africa has long had a reputation as being a constructive and progressive contributor to the UNFCCC. This dates back to the very beginning, where some of our officials had a key role in drafting the convention itself, through to the Durban COP, which South Africa hosted, and that's really set the framework for the Paris Agreement, and adopted in 2015, where South Africa was the chair of the G77 and had a very central role in that adoption of the Paris Agreement, and it continues to the current day. And we also entered this COP with some national progress, which was reported to the UNFCCC. This includes significantly the adoption of a just transition framework. And we also have that JETP initiative with the partners the Deputy Minister referred to, which the international community was very interested in observing at COP27. A next general position, of course, is that this is an African COP. The COPs rotate geographically around the world. And when it comes to your own continent, that's, of course, an opportunity to try and secure greater progress on issues of priority to the continent. And Egypt is, along with South Africa, one of the biggest contributors to the Africa group in terms of scientists and negotiators, and we work very closely with them. So that was key for us, is to make this a successful COP. And the generic position we adopt for all of these sustainable development issues, including climate change, is this location within the right to development, people-centered sustainable development, and just transitions. And that speaks to our national priorities of addressing the triple challenges: poverty, inequality, and unemployment. And we mentioned here the last point about no one SDG being more important than the other within the big context, of course, of eliminating poverty, because there is a tendency from some countries or partners to elevate energy transition or climate change above some of the other SDGs. That's not the approach we took. We're trying to implement all of them as a holistic package. So if we may move to the second slide. The key to ambition from our perspective, and this is a common position from the G77 and China and Africa group, is that ambition needs to speak to all aspects. So if you want more ambition on mitigation, the way to make that happen is through enabling means of implementation support. That is really financed technology transfer and capacity building. And critically for South Africa, and especially middle income and so-called emerging countries, to use the UN terminology, you can't leave some countries behind and only prioritize some subcategories of developing countries. All developing countries who need support should have the right to apply for it. And the trend is unfortunately going in the opposite direction. And we're even seeing, when it comes to accessing the multilateral development banks and the big, which are mostly in the form of loans these days, there are estimates that as much as 70% of the world's population is not really eligible because of where they come from. They may, for example, coming from emerging countries who the UN classifies as too rich to apply, but that's not the reality on the ground. The next very important position for us is respect for the Rio principles and building them into the system so that when you operationalize and implement Paris, which is Paris Agreement, which is what we're doing now, these are not just slogans, they are actually part of the implementation architecture. And in particular, it's equity, this idea of fairness amongst countries and differentiation, where not all countries have the same responsibility for causing climate change, and they don't have the same abilities to do anything, you know, to address it. So that's a fundamental thing. And much of these negotiations are about defending that space, because there's a lot of pushback from the other side who are trying to eliminate these. The Deputy Minister referred earlier to Africa's special needs and circumstances. This is a long-standing challenge for Africa, because under the convention, three categories were recognized as being particularly vulnerable to climate change. That was Africa, all Africa countries, least developed countries, and small island developing states. Why that matters is because that's really the linkage to support. The most vulnerable ones tend to have prioritization for accessing multilateral funding as well as bilateral funding. So when it came to Paris, Africa was left off that list, and African countries never agreed to that, because the science is very clear that Africa is the most affected region and the least responsible for causing climate change and has particular developmental challenges. So that is at the very highest levels, especially at the summit level from Africa. This was a key message we wanted to bring to the Africa COP. And finally, on the overarching approaches, an issue such as climate change cannot be addressed, you know, by governments or any other actor on their own. So this inclusive stakeholder approach is fundamental to our position. So with the environment minister in the lead, there was an extensive consultation process nationally in South Africa. Ahead of COP27, for example, we had a national workshop on the global stocktake, which is one of the specific agenda items, to try and get the diversity of views in and to feed that into the UN system. And the delegation itself is also multi-sectoral, you know, multidisciplinary in nature. We have top scientists in there from outside government. We have a multitude of government departments, and those are just the negotiators. The overall South African delegation covers all stakeholders. If we may move to the next slide. Just to give an idea of what COP27 is, because it's quite difficult if you look at the media to get a perspective of how large and diverse and complicated this, these UN climate meetings have become. They're very lengthy in duration, and they overrun, like this one did, by two full days. And they're the largest and most complicated of all of the multilateral events, with the largest attendance. And the Glasgow COP attracted over 40,000 people. We're waiting to see what the Sharm el-Sheikh figures were, but the attendance was still massive. And the reason for this is because it's not just the negotiations, that's just one part of the machinery. Every type of stakeholder has their own parallel process. We also have summits, which have become a trend in recent years, and Egypt hosted one this time. We have an important structure for parliamentarians, and South Africa, as honorable members would know, brought a parliamentary team from the Environment Portfolio Committee and the NCOP to the COP27. We had a very large business delegation, civil society, scientists, so all categories from South Africa and other countries were represented there. There were even two complexes of these meetings. One was so-called green zone, which is for the business, and then it was another equally massive or even more massive complex for all of the other processes. But as for the negotiation process itself, the mandated part from the UNFCCC, the parties to the convention and the Paris Agreement. What you see on the screen there is the sub-element meetings of the main negotiating groups. For South Africa, that is the Africa Group of Negotiators, the AGN, and the G77 and China. The basic group doesn't have formal coordinating structures, but I'll explain later how important that becomes, especially at the political level. So there's at least a week, and for some of the negotiators, even longer, of preparatory meetings. And then the official opening day, and there are three governing bodies. So each one of these, the convention itself, the Kyoto Protocol, and the Paris Agreement all have their own governing bodies. And then you had a two-day summit, which was the first part of the high-level statement, when the deputy ministers explained that our president was there, leading for South Africa. And then after the summit, you get into the negotiations themselves through subsidiary bodies. There's two of them, SBI and SAPSTA. And finally, the environment ministers come in, and it becomes like a joint negotiation with ministers and negotiators, as well as a second high-level statement. So any country that didn't deliver their national statement in the first part would have done so then. So if we could move to the next slide. The key challenge for us as negotiators was, of course, that the geopolitical context was extremely tense and with strained relations between the major powers. The one in particular that threatened this particular conference, but resolved itself in the end, was the bilateral tension between the United States and China, because those two countries, as the world's number one and two emitters, tend to make the final deals that shapes COP outcomes. And ahead of this meeting, China had declared that they would not do so this time because of the Taiwan issue. The next issue, of course, was the Russia-Ukraine war. That has disrupted a lot of multilateral processes this year, but it's also sparked much wider crises, such as the tensions between the major powers and energy crises and food crises. The second one you see on the screen is particularly important to this process, which tends to be divided. See divisions between mainly developed countries and developing countries. There's a lot of complexity within that, but that's the most important broad division between parties. And because the developed countries had legal obligations and made a lot of voluntary commitments because of on the basis of their historical responsibility for climate change, and those were broadly not met, this led to a trust deficit from the developing side, and also from the developed side that felt that some of the bigger emerging economies needed to take on more responsibilities legally as well. So you've had a standoff and a very poor environment between those two groups. And this matters because the climate architecture is less of a legal arrangement than it is a mutual confidence arrangement between countries, that if you take action, which can of course have economic consequences, you can be assured that your economic competitors will do so as well, and that you will not be adversely affected. So indeed, we did see that this context did make the negotiations a lot more difficult. They were very tense, very protracted. There was a complete absence of trust and goodwill in some of these negotiating rooms, and that did lower the prospects for maximum ambition. So we were looking, so the realistic outcomes were not, the best for science, but the ray of hope that came and ultimately proved to be the case was that a deal would be made, because the G20, which was also facing very protracted and difficult negotiations, did secure an outcome for its summit in the middle of our conference. So that also gave a signal that it would work out. If I may turn quickly to a little bit more detail on the negotiating dynamics. If we could go to the next slide. The Deputy Minister mentioned that the summit provided much needed momentum and political direction, captured the international community's attention and focused the negotiations. And it attracted an absolutely massive attendance, bigger than even the General Assembly in New York. I think we got up to about 105 leaders at last count. The two who weren't there in the actual summit, but it came individually later, were President Biden of the United States and the incoming future president of Brazil, Lula da Silva. And they held their own meetings with absolutely massive attendance, which also gave some signals to the process. Really affect the political issue, which of course there were a lot of speeches and positions, but and there was no blocking action from either side. Russia's positioning was quite interesting. They used to be a member of what was called the Umbrella Group, which is the United States, all the countries who pulled out of the Kyoto Protocol. So Norway, United States, New Zealand, Australia, Israel, and so forth. Russia was expelled from that group before the COP by the other members, and